This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Oh, man. Welcome to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. I am your host, Steve Ulscher, along with Richard Tay's in the house, and White Wade's here, and we have no idea what happened to Mary Goulet, but here's what I know. Dave sweeped her off of her feet and took her on a romantic getaway. And hopefully those two are engaged in gift-giving to one another. Because that was yesterday of our last episode, right?
Yes. Most definitely. Look. And I was just saying, I imagine they're galloping off together on a white horse on the beach somewhere in Encinitas.
Poor horse. My God. I feel bad. That's not a gift to that horse. All right. So here's what I'm thinking. I am thinking that this show should be pretty darn interesting. And, Rich, do you know what this show's about? Do you remember this one? You remember what we talked about?
Yes. Right. I mean, I know.
You know, generally.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to be reinventing true police stories, and that's going to be pretty fun because, as you know, I'm a fan of reality everything, and so we think we know what happens in that world, but the people who really understand what happens out in the world are those on the front lines, right? And so getting a couple of, actually, ladies on the show to talk about reinventing true police stories, that should be pretty interesting. You know what else is really interesting, Rich?
What's that?
A United Airlines pilot arrested in Texas on charges that he ran a string of brothels in apartment complexes throughout Houston. Pretty interesting. So Bruce Wayne Wallace, 51, of Houston, was charged with aggravated promotion of prostitution and engaging in organized criminal activity, jailed on Wednesday and released with a $15,000 bond. They say he was operating about a half dozen brothel apartments with between 6 and 10 women in each, according to the Chronicle. So let's just get this straight. So a half dozen, 6 and 10, let's just call it 8. He had 48 employees. That's a pretty formidable organization right there.
Man, $15,000 doesn't sound like much when you got 48 employees to get you out and go back to work.
It's like, yeah, okay, please, where do I sign? Get me out of here. So the court records obtained by the Chronicle alleged that the women's services were advertised online and that the women had to pay Wallace $400 a week in the arrangement. Well, let's run through the numbers here. 48 women paying him $400 a week. $20,000 a week.
Like I said, the $15,000 was cheap.
That was like less than a week's pay for the guy. And here's the best thing about it. He's not even paying for anything. Like, he's not even doing the work. Like,
User-generated content.
Exactly. I love that concept. Just let everyone else do the work for you, and you just sit back, and you collect them. And look, we are this is a society that is based on capitalism, right? I mean, let's be honest here. And so this country was built on the notion of if you work hard, you will be rewarded, right? So I'm not sure what the problem is here. What did Wallace do? What am I missing here? What did he do that's wrong? He gave women jobs. Women are complaining all the time about equal pay and having, you know, fun work to do. He employed 48 women in Houston, gave them a fun job, obviously paid them well enough that they could pay $400 a week for this. So if they're paying him $400 a week, let's run the math on that. If they're paying him $400 a week, that means they're paying him $1,600 a month. My hunch is that they're probably making 5 to 10x what that payment is, right?
I'd guess, yeah. Worst case scenario, one day's
pay. Yeah. So wait, let's look at it like this. So wait, when you go and you engage with Wallace's employees, what are you paying nowadays for one of their sessions?
Well, it just goes on a credit card for the company. You know, I really don't pay that much attention to those details.
So you just put it on your American Express.
Yeah,
and just
exactly.
Go, right?
Exactly.
Let the accountant deal with that.
Exactly.
What does it show up on the statement as? That's what I'm wondering.
Gentlemen's Club.
What was the name of the club in the last episode? What did I call that? Pinup.
Yeah.
Pinups, right? Yeah. You have a VIP card there for pinups, right? Wait, no? No?
Well, actually, they just know me by face, you know? But I really think we need to get Wayne Brady on this interview.
Who's Wayne Brady? Is that comedian dude?
Exactly.
What did he do? I don't know the story. Did I want to know.
Why did you have to
No, please. What did he do?
Nothing Mary, that salacious. It's simply they did a spoof on the Dave Chappelle show because Wayne Brady's the most innocuous guy. So Dave goes out for an evening with Wayne, and you find out he's a pimp, he's a drug dealer. You know, he's like shooting people, and Dave Chappelle's just like, oh my God, oh my God.
Let me ask you guys a question, because obviously this investigation, I mean, it began in July by the State Department of Public Safety, the Houston Police Department, and the Harris County District Attorney's Office. Authorities searched 17 locations Wednesday, and 12 people were arrested on a variety of charges. I just want to be the guy, like, if I'm a cop, and they're going, yeah, we're going to bust this, this brothel, this prostitution ring, we've got to get some hard evidence. Right? We got to get some hard evidence and to make sure that what is going on is like actually going on. Are you going to be the cop who's going to be like, yeah. Well, I'll go undercover. Sergeant. Yeah, I'll go undercover on that one.
And what I love is look at all the agencies involved. And you know, each of them was, well, we've got to do our own investigation.
Right, because one report isn't. And so they had to come out of pocket to pay the ladies, right? To just make sure that, in fact, what the other department was reporting was accurate.
Exactly.
Because look, in my way of thinking, that is just good old-fashioned police work. That's what they should be doing. Because you don't want to bring up a guy like this on charges unless you've got verifiable proof. So this is where I go in with like my GoPro, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, you know, like if I'm the cop and I got to go in, I've got that GoPro thing on my head, and I'm just going in and I'm just doing my thing. And of course, you know, you just basically say, hey, look, your reality is just ignore this camera on my head. Here's the money, and let's do our thing. And Wallace gets rich, and I have fun, and the lady gets paid.
Yeah, and I just imagine these days you walk in with a GoPro on your head, and the madam of the brothel goes, oh, a number 37. Okay.
So the investigation was worked as a coordinated effort between all three agencies in an effort to combat prostitution and massage brothels in the greater Houston area, the agency said in a joint statement. Now, here's the best part about all of this. The best part about all of this is Wallace has a day job. You want to take a wild guess.
Oh, gosh.
Just a wild guess in terms of what his day job is.
Go away.
He's a cop.
He's a cop. Now, that would have been pretty good, and that would make sense, right? And actually, we got a couple of ladies coming on to talk about their true police story, so that should be pretty interesting, and maybe he could have been. Rich, what do you think? What do you think his day job was?
Just don't tell me it's a teacher.
The teachers just they just pimp out their students, right? I mean, that's yeah, and then talk about like, you know, equal pay. No, you don't have to pay the students jack. Just give them an A, right? It's like an easy A. I mean, I think that works out well. No, he was he's a pilot.
Oh, geez.
For United Airlines. Yeah. And so here's what United has to say about all of this. So United says, we hold our employees to the highest standards, said Charles Hobart, which I thought was pretty improbable. You know, Charles Hobart.
I wonder if it's called the Mile High Club.
So, and he wouldn't even go in to provide the statement. He just reported via phone. But rest assured that Wallace has been removed from quote unquote flight duties, but currently remains employed at the company. And Hobart added that United is, quote, assisting authorities in this investigation. Interesting.
Whole nother meaning to frequent flyers.
Hey! We just keep going down.
And you can just imagine United going, well, did you use our services to fly any clients in? If so.
Yeah, and because can't you do that? Like, as an employee, you can fly people, like, you can fly your relatives and all for free, right? I mean, I think that's kind of how it works.
But United wants some charge. Oh, you're running a prostitution ring? Well, I hope you're bringing in people from Minneapolis.
We're losing business. Why'd you shut that guy down?
And so here's what I'm kind of wondering. First of all, I think United's probably going to have to change their slogan now, right? Because wasn't their slogan, like, fly the friendly skies or whatever that is?
Well, no, they can keep the slogan. It's just the intonation. Fly the friendly skies.
The musical change, too.
All right. Get your seatbelt. And slowly insert the buckle. Yeah,
don't
right.
Don't forget the oxygen mask.
right in here. Make sure that you take care of your, you know, your seat partner first before you take care of yourself. Yeah. I mean, that's just good old-fashioned, you know, customer relations right there. I think they've got a chance here to spin this in a really positive way.
And make sure that your seat's in the upright position.
Oh, man. Wow. We could probably just keep going on and on like this. But here's the moral of the story. The moral of the story is, what happens if we just make all this shit legal? I mean, like, really. Think about in this little investigation of Wallace and his, you know, 19 brothels or whatever it is, they probably spent millions of dollars, right? I mean, they had to. And what are you really doing? What are you really protecting people from? Because let's be honest here. The women are working there, and let's make the assumption that they're working there by choice, right? That they're not being forced to. This is not a sex slave scenario. Now, if it's a sex slave thing, I totally get it. Then totally get the totally get the government involved. Break that shit up. Don't let that happen under any circumstances. Totally get that. But if these women are working there voluntarily and they want to do what they are doing and they're making really good money doing it, they're paying their rent. They're paying for their cars. They're probably putting food on the table for kids if they have them. They're keeping the lights on. Maybe they're putting themselves through college. Right? I mean, who knows what it might be? And reality is, if you go to McDonald's, you're going to make $7 an hour. You work for Wallace. I mean, obviously, you're paying this guy $400 a week. You're doing much, much, much better than that. But I think we just make all this stuff illegal, save the billions and billions and billions that we're spending on prostitution, on drug-related enforcement, etc. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk to Sherry Clark and Floyd Turner. I'm going to get it right. But we're going to talk to Sherry and Floyd after the break here as we are reinventing true police stories on Reinvention Radio.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What Is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. I'm your host, Steve Ulcher, along with Rich Ote and White Way in the house. Oh, man, Mary Goulet, we miss you. We love you, Mary. And hopefully you will be back very, very soon. All right, so wait, let's do this. Let's bring Floyd on. And we're not going to have Sherry on today, so we're just going to have Floyd. And just for future reference, wait, please give me that information before I do all that stuff. So, Floyd, you're on with us, correct?
I am.
How are you? Welcome and welcome, welcome to Reinvention Radio. Really appreciate you having made the time to join us today. Now, you have a pretty interesting background insofar as being involved in the world of law enforcement, and we're going to be reinventing true police stories here today. Can you give folks an understanding generally of what your background is in the world of law?
Sure, Steve. I'd be glad to. In the early 1980s, I became a state trooper in Florida, and I was actually in with the beginning of introducing females into law enforcement. So I was one of the earlier females accepted at the Highway Patrol Academy, and that actually led me onto a wonderful ride. And I had great experiences in law enforcement and worked for 25 years as a state employee in Florida with two different law enforcement agencies.
Interesting. And didn't you also worked for the NYPD for a while, is that correct?
No, my co-author, Sherry, worked for NYPD.
Gotcha.
After 11 years, I moved from Florida Highway Patrol to Florida Department of Law Enforcement, where I was a special agent.
Okay, I got it. And so what is the name of your book, just so we can put that on the table as well?
It is Behind Her Miami Badge, Undercover, The Cocaine Wars, and Life in the Fast Lane.
Wow. Okay, so let's take us back then to the height of the cocaine wars. That was, well, that's got to be around the Miami Vice time, right? So we're talking in the 80s. Is that, what would you consider to be the height of the cocaine wars then there in Florida?
Steve, you nailed it. In the 80s in Miami, it was wild. Wild and crazy.
Yeah. Yep. And so take us through, like, what did that look like? Like, draw the picture for us, for those who can't imagine what Miami in the 80s looked like. Give us sort of that, you know, give us the photograph that's in your mind.
Wow. Well, there was just so much going on. In the early 80s, at Miami's most popular mall at the time was in Kendall, called Dadeland Mall. And there was actually this huge shootout in Dadeland Mall in the parking lot in the 80s between warring cocaine dealers. And that was the first real big media event that really grasped the rest of the country about what was going on in Miami.
Mm-hmm. And so at that point, are we talking about, is that Colombian? Is that Central America? Where was most of the drug money and drugs itself and the people? Where were most of those people from at that point?
At that point, it was, just like you stated, Colombia.
And so you worked on, I mean, you were just dead smack in the middle of all of this. Take us through probably, because my brother, stepbrother, is a Chicago cop, and having done mixed martial arts for a number of years, I trained with a lot of Secret Service folks and CPD and Department of Justice, et cetera. Just people, obviously, who need to know what to do if push comes to shove, FBI, et cetera. And one of the guys that I trained with for a while was the head of gang enforcement for the city of Chicago. And my God, the stories that he had and the pictures that he took, like he would literally keep some of these pictures in his office. And so you could see just the atrocities that these folks were doing to one another. As you look back on those images that are just, you know, obviously just permanently etched into your mind, take us through some of the real ugly that you just can't get out. Because once you see something, I mean, it's darn near impossible to get it out of that memory bank. What's some of the ugly stuff that really sticks with you still?
Well, Steve, there was one particular morning when I took my daughter to school, and the school was a few miles from my house, and this was elementary school. I had to get her there early because she was the safety patrol. And when I dropped her off, I went down towards the PE field to turn around, and I was actually in my patrol car. And laying in the field was a gal that had been executed, and she had been shot with a shotgun in the back of her head.
Wow.
And she was sprawled across the field there. And I actually talk about that in my book. It was just a horrific sight. And of course, my first action, because I was a mother at that time, my first reaction was, I have got to get in the school right away. I reported it on my radio, went right in the school and said, please keep all the children away from this area. I don't want any of them to see this.
Yeah.
And that's how crazy it was back then. People were dying all over.
And it's a pretty sick individual. I mean, obviously, it's a sick individual that decides I'm going to shoot somebody in the back of the head. I mean, regardless of, you know, I owe you money, you didn't do this, or whatever. I mean, if you decide that it's time to kill somebody, I mean, you know you're a warped individual. But to then do it in a school yard where you know that there are going to be kids, you know that this is going to be publicly visible. I mean, like, at the very least, put that person somewhere that is completely out of, you know, visibility so that you, I mean, because it's bad enough for the woman, obviously, that had her demise in that field. But then think about what would have happened if the kids had seen what took place there. I mean, they would literally have been scarred for life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, unfortunately, we don't think about those types of things when we send our children off to school today. You know, we're thinking about, oh, they're going to learn this. They're going to have a great day, hopefully. And here, the worst of the worst was right in my small community. I was south of Miami in the small town of Homestead, kind of the last town before the Keys. And there it was, right in our community.
So let me ask you this. What is your take on legalization? I mean, and so just for those who are unclear, and just so that I'm completely clear as well, you are retired at this point, correct?
I'm doing some consulting, but I am basically retired.
And so what is your take? Because on the break here, we were talking about, Wei was bringing up the Netherlands. And so in the Netherlands, they've legalized prostitution. They've legalized, I believe, pretty much every drug available to man and woman. And so the amount of law enforcement that has to be dedicated to enforcement is obviously nil. And the number of people who end up in prison is obviously drastically reduced, to the point where Wade was actually saying that they're closing prisons because they just don't have enough people to put in there. So what is your take on legalization in terms of drugs and in terms of prostitution?
Well, Steve, I'm probably going to differ from you because I don't have a good take on it at all. And I have understood that if the Netherlands does have a very large human trafficking issue.
Okay, so, but take us through, like, if you have a case, somebody says, we believe that there is some sort of illicit activity going on in this particular location. Take us through what has to happen, what sort of man and woman power is dedicated to enforce just even a tip, let alone something you know is going on. What happens? Take us through exactly what happens.
Well, are you speaking of a brothel type of an operation?
Sure, let's start there, because we talked about that in the first segment here. So let's start there.
Okay. First of all, you're going to need some surveillance units to actually see what's going on in the area, to catch some tags, or like I used to say, and when I was with Florida Department of Law Enforcement, I worked some human trafficking investigations in brothels. And the ones that I happened to work were just horrific, and they were involving human trafficking and juveniles that were also trafficked. So they were quite disturbing. But to me, a clue was when you were in an agricultural community and you had 20 farm workers lined up in front of a trailer at 4 o'clock every day. Something illegal is going on in there. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to find that out.
Sure.
But in those types of investigations, you might end up partnering with some code enforcement people. You also could partner with other law enforcement agencies. But you would employ some surveillance techniques of various kinds. Document that there's an unusual flow of traffic. You could insert an undercover, and the undercover would usually be a male that would be wired, and you would hear all the conversation.
Gotcha.
So it would just depend on how big of a place it was.
Yeah. All right. I got you. All right. So let's do this. Let's talk more to Floyd here about true police stories, and let's reinvent some of these here on Reinvention Radio right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
Too much to do? Not enough time to get it done? Call on the experts at Another 8 Hours for your business support needs. By partnering with Another 8 Hours, we allow you to focus on the more important matters, like being in front of your clients, doing what you do best, rather than being stuck at a desk poring over paperwork, rummaging through emails, returning phone calls, and struggling to get everything done by yourself. Meanwhile, your family and social life are going down the drain. Go to another8hours.com or call 8 more hours. That's 866-734-6877.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back here to another edition of Reinvention Radio, along with Richard Day and White Wade. And Kelly Polkers is somewhere in her lovely home, somewhere producing this show in her extraordinary way. And Mary Goulet is living the dream. She's having a romantic getaway with Dave. See, Dave gave her a nice gift. Dave gave her a really nice gift. I bet you...
Time away from here.
I don't know. Well, that. And I don't know how Dave did it, but somehow he was able to listen to Reinventing Gift Giving before we even recorded the episode. That guy is good. That guy is really good. All right. So before the break, we were talking to Floyd Turner here at Behind Her Miami Badge.com is the name of the website, the URL of the website, and the name of the book as well, Behind Her Miami Badge, a former special agent with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Wade, go.
Oh, okay. Well, I was listening with fascination at your description of kind of the details of being a cop and giving us a little bit of a picture behind the badge in that way, you know, all the detective work that goes into it. But obviously, you wrote the book with a purpose. And, you know, police are in the news these days. You know, there's lots going on, good, bad, you know, in, out. And so I'm curious, what did you want us to know was going on behind the badge that you feel people don't necessarily appreciate?
Well, that's a great question. And one of the biggest goals was writing the book. I kept thinking, what kind of a message can I give? And I came upon empowering women. That was one of the things I really wanted to do, because in the book, it talks about how I went from a housewife, a mother, to follow my dream. And I created a new dream of being in law enforcement and reinvented myself. So I wanted to take it a step further and give this story to women to empower them. But what's been so interesting is I have had so many compliments from men that have read this book and just said what a great read it was. So I was just thrilled with that reaction from a lot of my friends that are males and people I didn't know.
Okay.
So that was really cool.
Okay, so very cool. You're getting a great response. Now, moms in many ways are natural protectors. You know, they're the police of the kids by default. So I can see the connection between your career and being a mother. What do you want women to understand? I get the feeling you want them to understand they've got more control, that they've got power that they can exert as a mother, even if they're not wearing a badge. What do you want them to do in terms of taking control and using this power?
Well, I strongly feel that the first thing to do, and it's a a hard task sometimes with children. But I had not finished college. I only had 2 years of college before I had my children. So I realized, too, that obtaining an education is so important. So I would stress this for anybody that wants to reinvent themselves, get some type of a education. But I felt like I wanted to be able to give the message, take a dream and make it happen.
Well, very cool. And you're obviously participating in the community there in Miami. What are some things that you're involved with that they should be aware of so they can make a dream happen?
Wow. Well, that's a good point. And actually, I am now in North Florida, and I am on the board of our local domestic violence shelter and our sexual assault center. Plus, I am a board member of the Florida Missing Children's Day Foundation. And actually, Sherry, my co-author, and I did a marketing plan for the book, and we were able to become, through our book sales, bronze sponsors for this coming year in September when Florida Missing Children's Day is held. And that was so gratifying to me because I also worked in the field of missing children, and I'm still doing some consulting in that.
Yeah, interesting. All right, and that's obviously really, really, really good work. And so happy that somebody is out there thinking about the kids and making sure that, well, someone's got their best interests in mind. So let's take a step back here and look at you were involved with a pretty high-profile case. And for those who don't remember this case, this was kind of interesting because it started not terribly far from where I was up until a couple of years ago, which was in the Chicago area. And there was a young man who basically went on a murder spree. And one of the people that got caught in that crossfire was Gianni Versace, right? And so you were
correct.
Yeah, and you were in Florida, obviously, at that time. You were in that jurisdiction at that time. You were in law enforcement at that time. Everybody knew about this. Everybody was on a manhunt for this guy. You were involved directly in that Gianni Versace case. First of all, take us through what that was like when the case broke, and then I've got another question behind that.
Certainly will. And I believe the victim from Chicago was Lee Miglin. Is that correct?
It is, and it's interestingly enough, he was a in the real estate world for a number of years. His partner on a few very, very big projects was Paul Beitler. Paul Beitler was someone that that I knew quite well, and that was pretty shocking because let's just say that no one really knew Lee to be in that way in terms of being involved with men and so on, and that was kind of how that whole thing started.
Right. And I actually have been friends with a Chicago retired police officer that played a part in the Chicago part of that case.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and went cross country here. So then that obviously begs another question of how does that work jurisdiction wise? But take us through what happened when this broke in your jurisdiction.
I'd be glad to. And actually, in my next book, Behind Her Special Agent Badge, which will be out later this year. That case is covered. But first of all, it was early morning. I was living in Boynton Beach. I was headed down to Miami. I was with Florida Department of Law Enforcement as a special agent. And our dispatcher called me on the radio. I responded, and she said, "Be 1051, which is en route to the Versace mansion in Miami Beach. Versace's been shot." And I kind of went, "Oh, okay." Now, back in this day, I was pretty much wearing suits from Macy's, okay? I didn't know who Versace was. And I didn't want to appear dumb over the radio. So I called the dispatcher, and her name is Brina. I go, Brina, who's Versace? And she says, Mama, you mean you don't know who Versace is? He's a world-famous designer. That was my first clue as to how big this case was going to be.
Sure.
And I did. I responded down to Miami Beach to the mansion. I was in the mansion that morning. We obtained all the information. He had been to the, I think it was called the News Cafe right down the street in Miami Beach. And he had been shot point blank, two bullets, on the steps of the mansion. Well, immediately we did not realize the connection with Andrew Cunanan,
who was the
perpetrator. But we started, we had a lot of witnesses saying the guy was on foot, he went this way towards the parking garage, and we got a bloodhound from Miami-Dade Police tracked into the garage, and there was a pickup truck. And if you remember during this time, America's Most Wanted was constantly showing everything about this case.
Sure.
Not the Versace link, but the other murders.
The Cunanan, the Miglin one, yeah.
Yes, and then there was the one in New Jersey where he had stolen the red truck.
Right.
We get up there, and there's the red truck. And it's like, oh, my gosh. So we run the VIN number. We find out it was stolen during a homicide. We realize from that information that Andrew Cunanan, who's a serial murderer, was the one who murdered Johnny Versace. So that's how everything came together. I can tell you it was the craziest of times. Miami Beach worked the case. Florida Department of Law Enforcement, along with the Miami FBI. And it was just crazy.
Yeah.
Our techniques were all solid. Our leads tracking was solid. But what became almost unmanageable was the media frenzy.
Okay. Yeah, let's do this. We're going to have to take a quick break here. And it's really interesting to kind of look at what happens here behind the scenes, right, when a case like this breaks. So I've got a couple questions that I definitely want to ask here of Floyd. And it's, I got to tell you, man, you know, when you're on the front lines like that and you have an opportunity to work a world-renowned case, it's some pretty interesting stuff here. So we'll be right back with more on Reinvention Radio and Floyd Turner as we're talking about being behind her Miami badge.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. Let's jump straight back into this, talking to Floyd Turner through Reinventing True Police Stories. Now, before the break, we were talking about the murder of Gianni Versace and that whole case around Andrew Cunanan. Wow, I mean, really just simple math here, and you got to figure it cost, I mean, millions and millions and millions of dollars to get to the bottom of who did this, why they did it, the whole nine. And so my question to you, Floyd, is, you know, coming from Chicago, and I was there for 44 plus years before moving here to Southern California, what goes on the west side and the south sides of Chicago. I mean, it's just, it's a crying shame. There's just no other way to put it. I mean, we got black-on-black murders every single day to the tune of, I think this is, you know, we're over 100 murders already in Chicago, and we're not even done with March. So my question to you is, when you look at the resources that are dumped into a case like Versace, what's your take on special treatment? Because if this was just an average, you know, black gang member in Chicago, there's no way on God's green earth the media would have been involved, and there's no way on God's green earth that those types of resources would have been allocated to that investigation. So why does Versace get so much special treatment, and how do we just, I mean, it's really a double standard. What do we do about this?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, it was a spree murder, so it wasn't just Versace. But with that said, the media attention, the international media attention, really drove the bus on that. Now, with that said, because it was a spree killing, and if it had been a serial killing, which is quite similar to a spree, the FBI probably would have been involved. And possibly FDLE would have. But because it was such a magnitude of people coming into Miami, it just escalated this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're absolutely correct, because every life is valuable.
Yeah.
Every life. Yeah. And everybody deserves a good investigation. And I agree with you, and I think it's very unfortunate that in our society, some people are just kind of go by the wayside.
Yeah,
it
comes from the top down, right? I mean, you guys are obviously following the commands of your superior officer. The superior officers are obviously getting tremendous pressure to try to find the killers. So if you stepped up, like, let's just say you were a cop in Chicago, and you stepped up, mm-hmm. and you said, you know, what's going on here is an atrocity. We can't just let this continue to happen. We've got to find the murderer, you know, whoever is killing these people. We've got to find them in each and every case. You'd probably be laughed out of the room, right? Because the pressure isn't the same. In this case, you, with all of the media attention, it's like, okay, so what happened? So the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, you know, I mean, you guys are inept. You can't find the killer. Or, you know, the Miami-Dade Police Department, or whoever. I mean, you guys are inept. You can't find the killer. And so it starts rubbing this really bad look on you, and you guys look, you know, horrible in front of a global audience. So I would think from that perspective, the pressures to find this killer would have been just extraordinary.
Well, there again, because he was a spree killer, too, that meant more than one life had been taken. Other lives had been taken, and he was probably going to kill again.
Mm-hmm. But this is in the height of the drug wars in Miami, right? And so every single day, like Chicago.
It was after the drug wars, because it was in the later 90s. But I can tell you something. Here's the bottom line. In the drug wars in Chicago, or whatever, the gang wars, how many innocent children have also been murdered as a byproduct of this?
Yeah, you know, for sure. I mean, and then when you come right down to it, it's like they get caught in the crossfire. That's something you would stand up and you would want to do something about. This is just one seriously rich dude who people just know because he makes clothes that nobody else wants to wear, but so many people pay for them. So it's just like, you know, these kids get caught in the crossfire. Nobody does anything. This rich bastard, you know, gets himself murdered because he's going out to do whatever. And it's like the whole world comes to a standstill.
Well, there was certainly a lot of media attention. I might have been the only person that didn't know who he was before he was murdered. But I guarantee everybody knew afterwards.
And at some point, did you stand up and did you just say, hey, look, you know, we're giving this way too many resources. You know, there's like, why are we doing this? Did that ever cross your mind? Did you ever bring that up?
No, because I wanted to find this guy before he killed somebody else. I mean, he was probably going to kill again. And that was my mission and my focus. But I can tell you that on some other initiatives where I have worked in the inner city in Miami, I can tell you that personally, I have seen the ramifications of all these gangs, and it's just so horrific. And the kids that are caught in the middle, that's what really tugs at my heartstrings.
Yeah.
And I have a young man that grew up in the middle of all this that I mentored, and I'm so proud of him. He is actually with a Fox affiliate in Miami as an editor and occasionally a broadcaster. And, you know, here's a kid who you wouldn't have thought could have made it out of his circumstances. And it was through his own ability. He had a great ability to network. Mm-hmm. But how sad that, you know, all these children are murdered, and we have it in Florida. In these drive-by shootings and the ramifications that so many innocent children have been murdered or hurt, that's a great focus, and I think you bring up a legitimate point.
Well, thank you for that. And let's do this, because obviously we've gone down. I mean, look, police work is not always going to be the most glamorous in terms of you got to deal with the grime and the dirt and some things that just aren't so pretty. Let's kind of go to in a different direction here as we wrap.
Okay.
Tell us the funniest thing. Because criminals can do some really stupid things. I mean, because they're criminals, and, you know, obviously they think in ways that aren't very smart most of the time. But take us through, like, one of the funniest things that you ever saw someone do or you were involved with, from a case perspective.
Well, one of the really funny things that I will admit to, and that I took a lot of heat from my colleagues about, is we were working an undercover gig up on I-75, and this was in when I was a trooper in the late 80s. And I was working undercover, and a guy approached me for my services. Mm. And
I'm assuming not your police services.
No, they weren't my police services. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of entrapment issues. So all I could say to him was, well, what would it be worth for you for a certain sex act?
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, I don't have any money, but I have a bushel of beans. Would you take that in lieu of money?
Wow.
I'm wired, my team's recording this, listening to it, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, is that going to fly in court?
I'm not sure. I don't have a bushel of beans, right? Oh, that's a good one. All right, let's do this. We're going to have to wrap here, Floyd.
Okay.
Give folks once again your website if they want to get a hold of you and check out your book.
It's www.behindhermiamibadge.com.
All right, awesome. All right.
And we're also on Facebook.
Behind her Miami badge. Okay, awesome. Well, you know, we're going to let's do this again in terms of having some other folks in law enforcement on. But we'll try to get folks from, you know, some of the different departments to share their stories as well, because, I mean, we only know what the media tells us, and Lord knows the media doesn't tell us darn near as much as they could or should. All right, guys, well, let's do this. If you're subscribing and rating and reviewing the podcast, a big hug, big thank you for that. And we've got a number of very, very interesting episodes coming up here on Reinvention Radio. So for Rich Otey, White Wade, Mary Goulet, wherever you are, Kelly Poker, we'll talk to you guys next time on Reinvention Radio.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olscher, visit reinventionradio.com.